Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. After a short hiatus for personal reasons, we're back, and we are back with a splash. We're welcoming back Justin Andrew Hoke. We're going to talk about his novels, his films, and his podcast. Welcome, Justin.
Oh, hi, Sherry.
Hi, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be back.
To start, for people who didn't hear the previous broadcast, why don't you tell a little bit about yourself, your background, and, you know, a little bit about how you came to create your novels and your podcast and your film and stuff.
Well, I've been sucked into science fiction since I was a little kid. My favorite books ranging from, you know, Larry Niven to Isaac Asimov to Catherine of Sorrow and all points in between. I was a bookwormy kid, and one day I got the bug in me to really want to tell the stories just like the stories that I had I'd read as a child and expand the horizons. And so then I started concepting what series Pacemaker, and I fell in love with steampunk. Which is funny because I was always very much into the more futuristic side of science fiction. But I found myself writing about the past historically far more. And I soon realized that there's amazing ways to play with the past with all the knowledge that you have of the future, especially with steampunk. So I started writing Pacemaker, and that came out of a feverish dream and a gift one day that my sister gave me. And as that followed, I soon found out you had to do more than just sell your books. That kind of came about as a byproduct of, hey, well, while you're out there trying to sell your book, kid, you should probably try to be in the public eye. I found myself on a podcast with five friends, and we would just drink craft beer and taste designer whiskeys and then talk about whatever came to mind. And after four seasons now, it's turned into a great journey into pop culture, a kind of a fun experience in tasting craft beers and craft whiskeys, and every once in a while, we take a stab at the current state of the world and talk politics. And then after we're good and drunk, we make up new universes because we love talking about the multiverse and the expanded universe that could possibly be.
Well, now, I came into podcasts strangely. I had an interview with someone, and I couldn't understand what they were saying. They were, like, asking questions that I couldn't hear, and I couldn't understand. And I thought, I could do this, and I could do it, I think, better. And that's why I started doing it. It was basically, and also, when I first had my first book, it was so hard even to get a Blog Talk Radio interview just to hear back from people. I decided that what I wanted to do was to help, especially new novelists, get the word out. So that became my specialty at the beginning, was to get people like myself help to get the word out. That's how I started. what was your idea? What was your concept when you started your podcast?
Really, it was just an excuse to get five authors or politicians or celebrities or anybody we'd randomly meet at a convention at the bar with us, and then we just talk it out. Which, you know, for some of our episodes, they were just simple as just you know, talking about what movies came out that weekend. And then after a while, we evolved into talking about the weight of the world and realizing that we, you know, even as authors and creators, you know, the fun side of life people, we realized that we were at a point of like, oh, well, we could talk about the things that matter to us, especially with the state of like how the United States election played out this past year and the growing want and need for people to be a little more expressive on that end instead of just hiding behind the consumerism of podcasts, because a lot of the podcasts these days are just like, oh, well, I watched this TV show and let's talk about this TV show. And there's like 1,000 podcasts that just talk about a TV show. And there's, you know, there's a lot of gems of podcasts that are just like, you know, going overlooked out there. Because, you know, a lot of people are just like, oh, well, I just want to talk about the new Guardians of the Galaxy, the new Star Wars. And we're having radio shows just to have radio shows about products that we've already watched or heard of a million times over. And there's amazing things like radio dramas going on podcasts.
Yay,
now.
That's
us.
Sherry's Playhouse.
Sherry's Playhouse. And I was also lucky enough recently to guest star on the season finale of Sage and Savants. So if anybody out there is listening and you're into cool paranormal radio dramas and steampunk and science fiction, I was just absolutely blessed to work with an amazing cast and crew on their season finale and be a part of the radio drama. And then coming up this weekend at Clockwork Alchemy in San Jose, we'll be doing a live episode of Sage and Savants, and I'm digging it. I always dreamed as a kid that I could like be a part of something like, you know, The Shadow or The Whistler or you know, all those cool classic radio plays, and they kind of fell to the wayside for a couple of decades. They weren't cool, you know, and then now the kids think they're cool again. So I get to lend my voice to bringing you know, fantastic characters to life. Especially since Eddie is great at writing
like
those characters.
Bringing the imagination to these people, you know, that it's like reading a good book. Your imagination
mm-hmm.
supplies what the character looks like and what's going on and all that. It's so much fun. I love doing we do it like six a season for Sherry's Playhouse, and it's so much fun because all of my plays are original. All my radio plays are from hardworking, semi-known playwrights, but not famous and not well-known. None of them have been on Broadway or anything. So they're all really
mm-hmm.
original shows. And I have people who are real professionals, and then I have people who are, this is the first time I've ever done a radio play or acted. So I have, like, it's really diverse group of people, and it's, like, so
mm-hmm.
much fun. How do you feel about, like, the diversity of all the different radio playhouses that are out there?
I think that for the vast majority, I think the concept booming is great, just like any other market these days, though, because we're always constantly in fast production out here in America for some reason. Like, I think the market's flooding a little bit. The same thing happened with podcasts once they kicked off. The same thing's constantly going on with you know, self-publishing books in America right now. I mean, and then, you know, YouTube shows. So, I mean, we're kind of in an age of excess, because everybody's catching on to the wave, but I think it's good. It's healthy for the market. You gotta have a bit of a boom to get everybody excited. But I think once it planes out, we'll start seeing, you know, more quality shows fight for everyone's attention.
Yeah, that's true. The thing that's really fascinating for me is I don't know how you feel, but I've been doing my podcast for 5 years, and
uh-huh.
one of the things I notice is how it's changed. It's changed because you change as a human being, but also the just what it is has changed. I don't know if you feel the same way about yours, but when I started, it was just writers, and then it became anybody creative, actors, playwrights, screenwriters, cinematographers, artists, costumers, whatever. Did you have that kind of transformation in your podcast?
Well, I tried to keep it diverse as far as, you know, panelists and guests from the get-go. My first season, we were at quite a few conventions, and it kind of just became a thing that we would podcast all day, and then we'd kind of cut up our best of and then put that online later instead of live broadcasting. And there's quite a few times where I ended up finding, you know, some 15-year-old kid who wanted to be a writer someday, or an amazing little cosplayer that was like 12 years old. And they'd have such good decorum on the microphone that they'd be like, hey, you want to stick around for a bit, be a special guest, and see what it's like to be on a podcast, kid? And, you know, their parents would sit there and go, yeah, let's do this. And so I think the youngest guest I've had so far is 12, and then the oldest guest well into their 80s. And then as far as walks of life, everything from a chemical engineer to software engineers to guys who just write the ads that for Petco to, like, you know, I just like any like just regular, you know, people that work. And then you've got, you know, you've got authors, and then and the musicians. And I love having bands on. Bands are great to have on the show. I regularly had the Velveteen Band on my show, and they're absolutely fun. I love working with musicians on the podcast, because even when they don't play music, the level of shenanigans that comes around having musicians on the show, it livens things up.
That sounds so much fun. Now, I'm going to switch gears a little to your author hat. I know about Pacemaker because I read it. I loved it. I reviewed it.
Thank you.
But I wanted to know about your books. What's going on with your writing? Anything new and exciting?
I took some downtime to reevaluate, because I had to move last year, and through the process, because I'd been baiting the Pacemaker series for a few years now, and I realized that with the way that the indie author market was going, it was best to wait it out a little bit, just to, you know, figure out the pace of the world, as it were. And the big thing for me is I realized that a lot of authors are very much, you know, they're out there trying to, like, constantly write their books and then keep what little fan base they have happy. And I realized that I didn't want to be writing one book for 15 people and then writing, you know, and then coming out with a second book because I go, by gummit, I'm going to release the next book anyways. And so I've to make my stories better, I've taken the opportunity to pull Pacemaker back to beta and get a lot more deeper reviews from readers, and then try to spend more time connecting with everybody and just getting Pacemaker, the first volume of Pacemaker, out there. And I'm kind of holding myself to my own little rule of, you know, I have to make so many sales before I decide to go on to the next book. Which is funny, because like 10 years ago, you know, a lot of those like self-publishing seminars, they tell you, oh, well, don't worry about like trying to sell this many copies of a book. But I think they thought about it more on the capitalist sense of, don't be invested in the idea that it's going to make you money. But for me, it's from the concept of, you know, I'd have to sell so many before I release my second book. It's more the idea that, like, okay, I've connected with enough people, my story's gotten out there enough, and you know, now's the time to connect even deeper with that audience, and then maybe grow an even larger audience. I see so many authors out there on the circuit that they're on like their 10th book, and they've only been out for like 2 years. But because they have the
theory.
Yeah, well, and it's just and the same thing's happening in YouTube shows and in the fashion industry. I mean, we kind of like we're becoming fast at everything in America, which is not exactly good because our quantity is going up and our quality is going down. And yeah. So I realized that, you know, it was good to take some downtime on releasing Pacemaker, craft the story a little more, also spend some time trying to write more screenplays, write more short stories. I took a really long break with DreadfullyPunk.com in general and I'm trying to refigure out the scope of how I want to release my stories and how I want things to come out. So how often I'll have an audio story or how often I'll write a flash fiction story or if I'll, you know, try to submit to an anthology. And I find now it's more just it's concentrating on bringing out a good story when a good story is ready. And then, you know,
that's important. Huh? I think that's very important. It's sort of like it's sort of like a cake. You can't take the cake when it's half baked because it doesn't taste very good and looks terrible.
Exactly. Nobody wants to eat doughy cake.
Yes.
Nobody exactly. wants to eat doughy books. No, I'm just kidding.
No, nobody wants to eat a doughy book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So are you bringing out Pacemaker again?
I will. As it sits right now, I'm gonna take a long break with it because I've been working on enough film projects lately that's kind of come to the forefront. I mean, I'll always be a writer first, but if you're gonna tell me that I get the opportunity to put something, whether it's up on the small screen or even on the internet or just a private viewing at a convention, I'm down. So lately a lot of filmmaking has been keeping me busy, whether it's just, you know, simple corporate work while I'm holding a boom mic or busy actually putting a page to screen. And I fully intend on releasing more Pacemaker after it's ready. Right now, I'd like to say I'd be looking at Steamathon next year. That's a big steampunk convention out in Las Vegas, and that's going to be Valentine's Day weekend.
Cool.
In Las Vegas, and that's actually the anniversary of Pacemaker is Valentine's Day weekend. So I was just like, you know what? It's 5 years of development. And why not try to, you know, aim for having it ready by then? So the new format idea will be that if you buy Pacemaker, you'll get an ebook download code in the back of the book for a digital copy of book two. So because I've already got a few of the books ready, but I'm keeping myself to the standard of I'll only be carrying the print one of the previous and then a free copy of the digital and then. And then once I'm ready to release the physical copy of book two, then that will come with a free copy of book three. So that way I'm kind of like pulling in a beta on each book and then, you know, it kind of self-promotes itself.
That makes sense. That's how
yeah.
we met. You came over to me and you said, hey, you want a free book?
Yeah. Read my book. And, you know,
yeah.
And lately, like for me, another reason why I've been more, I would rather spend time finding people in person to give a free copy of my book, being at conventions and giving away like hundreds of copies rather than fight the sea online of trying to get noticed in the beginning. Anyways, I mean, I feel that like a lot of these younger authors are trying to just like, oh, hey, like this book's totally worth $35. Buy this book. And if you don't like it, then, you know, pound sand. And I'm finding, like, you know, if I'm a nobody, I've got to give away a few of my books and take that scrutiny and that ridicule and the criticism and turn it into something better each time. So,
$35?
I know. Some people, I know. Seriously. Well, actually,
oh, my
you know,
God.
It brings
I wouldn't buy
J.K.
Rowling's or Dan Brown's or two of my favorites for $35.
Well, you know, and that brings me to a funny point. Another reason why I've kind of stopped bothering with the online feeding frenzy of trying to sell a book is you've also got piracy runs rampant. and it easily catches indie authors like ourselves. I mean, within the first year, my book was already pirated like plenty of times, which for me on one side, I'm like, that's cool. Lots of people read my book because it was pirated. But then the other side was like somebody managed to.
Yeah, I'm not making any money from it.
Yeah, well, I'm not worried about the money part in the beginning. It's more just like more content thieves. Like there's I'm regularly like fighting with people on Amazon, like reseller bookstores, that they'll go ahead and they'll use their access via CreateSpace to get an EPUB copy of my book, and then they're reselling out of their store. And I mean, what's normally a 99-cent ebook starts going for $2.99 on their page, and then what's normally a $4.99 paperback dime novel goes for, you know, $25 on their page. And part of me is like, well, wow, somebody paid $25 for my book. But then another part of me goes, well, wow, like I could have been writing another book by now if I knew that there were plenty of people who'd be, you know, buying it, let alone spending that kind of money on it.
Exactly.
But that's the sad downside to internet piracy right now is, I mean, just as bad as it is for the majorly published, like New York Times bestsellers, even the little guys like us, we've got to worry about watching our content. And so I've kind of become a content police for some of my friends. So in a lot of cases, like I'll go and I'll hunt down, like, and I'll serve letters for them. Just like, hey, you know, this guy's ripping off your book and reselling it over here and in some New York City Amazon page. And, you know, yeah. So we kind of look out for each other.
Gary, it's sad.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, if you want to go through all that energy, why don't you do some of your own creating instead of stealing other people's?
Yeah, well, you know, some people like Rembrandt so much that they just they copy them, you know. And no, by no means am I calling myself Rembrandt. I'm just using you know, they would rather just resell a copy. But that's another problem that I'm seeing a lot on the fandom convention circuit is far too many people are comfortably reselling things that they don't have the license rights to resell. You have a lot of unlicensed artists these days. You know, I go through Artist Alley at Comic-Con, and there's more people trying Deadpool picture, Batman drawing. Hello? Yes?
Oh, I lost you for a second. I'm sorry. What were you saying?
That's okay. Well, it's, you know, you find yourself in Artist Alley these days at, like, Comic-Con, and, you know, there's far more people sitting there in booths selling, you know, unlicensed photos and recreations and fan memorabilia than you do have people trying to create new fandoms or write new stories or, you know, create new products.
Yeah, I was saying that to the guy who was running it at Condor. I was saying, I don't understand. Some of the stuff is, I mean, there's a lot of original stuff that's gorgeous, but
mm-hmm.
some of the stuff is just taken from posters and movie posters and stuff like that. I don't understand how that's considered art. You know,
well,
that movie poster is art, but not from them. You know what I mean?
Exactly. You know, and then you have to go through the whole conversation of telling them what's, you know, being a reseller versus what's being a licensed artist and what's being an unlicensed artist. And they're like, well, I just want to draw Deadpool pictures and resell those all day, or just make buttons out of comic book photos I find. And it's like, you do realize that, you know, you have to go through a little bit of a chain here in order to be able to legally do that. You know, it's so much easier to try to be
original.
You know, the master of your own invention than it is to, you know, spend it. You know, and I think that has a lot to do with why we're getting all of these reboots and repeats, and like even the fandom scene is running out of new ideas because all we're doing is holding on to old concepts and constantly reselling them. Because, I mean, the other sad part is in this economy is I can understand not a lot of people want to buy new stuff because they're afraid of new stuff. So it's like, oh, I'll go see Avengers 22 or Guardians of the Galaxy 14 because, you know, it's comfortable. The monotony of creation has set in. So people are just like, oh, I don't need new characters. I just need the same old Spider-Man.
You know,
and
what, that's
for me,
really funny? It reminds me of, I don't know if you remember Airplane, the original movie Airplane, but they had a poster that said Rocky 24. Is like, because I think it was on Rocky was on number 4 or number 5, and they were saying that he was going to go to Rocky 24.
And it's just like in,
and that was back in the
80s with,
before all this stuff started.
You know, just like in Back to the Future 2, when Marty makes it to the future and he's walking around and he's in front of that the movie theater next to the Texaco station and the Jaws 19 in 3D and, you know, shark still looks sick.
I know, it's just really funny. We don't have a lot of time, and I wanted you to be able to talk about your films. We only have like 5 minutes. Do you have any film coming out that you want people to see? Any events or anything that are coming?
Next week, Tuesday, June 6th at 6:30 p.m. at the AMC Mission Valley Cinemas. We'll be screening our 48-hour film that we made this last weekend. In San Diego, we had the opportunity to compete in the 48-hour film project. So I had 48 hours to write, shoot, direct, edit, render a movie from beginning to end. And you can't even like bring your own ideas in advance. They give you genre picks and then lines you have to say. And so there's a few things to confirm that, like, to hold you to that standard of, yes, you completely wrote it and directed it and shot it all in a 48-hour period. So we pulled action-adventure was our genre. We had to have a specific line that had to be said in the movie just to, you know, make sure that it was in congruence with the competition rules. And then we had to have a prop that had to show up and then a name of a character and what their vocation in life was. And so if you follow the Dreadfully Punk Facebook page, we've got an event listed. You can buy tickets to the 48-hour film project screening. Tickets are $20, or you can get the pass for the entire week for $100 to go see all of these films that nearly like 200 screenings of 7-minute short films of people who made up a film right there on the spot over the weekend with what equipment and people they had. And it was absolutely fun. I worked with David Drake of Drake and McTrowell. He's such a great artist to collaborate with. The weekend before at Gaslight Gathering, we actually, as a practice run, we a film using the convention attendees and a script that we had already prepared as kind of like a way of like getting the process down and seeing how well we gel and work together. I'm in the middle of editing my first 30-minute feature that I'm just the editor and was a sound engineer and soundtrack artist on. It's called Couples Night. It'll be coming out later this year once we get the final draft approved by the production team. And, going on to do a few more competitions later this year and hopefully doing some fun and inventive things at the next couple conventions, especially after the Gaslight Gathering, shooting with the attendees and cosplayers thing. Drake and I are thinking about putting together a few more scripts and seeing if we can do some guerrilla-style movies in the middle of conventions, like green screen backdrops and all, and using cosplayers to recreate famous scenes and stuff like that.
Oh, that sounds fun. That's really cool. And So when are these conventions? Can you give the dates and where people can find them? And also where people could buy the tickets for the movie thing, the 48-hour movie competition.
If you go to 48hourfilmproject.com/San Diego, or you can go to facebook.com/dreadfullypunk, hit up our events section. We have the screening and time listed. If you click tickets, it goes straight through. And you can buy a ticket from the 48-hour film project. All proceeds of that go towards the next year's film project and keeping the competition running, which it's such an exciting competition. Before we run out of more time, you can check if you just follow Dreadfully Punk on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Keep up with that there. I'll be at San Diego WhoCon. Will be the next big one. We'll be working on a using the attendees to make a short little Doctor Who fan film.
Oh, how cute.
And that'll be second week of September at the Crown Point Plaza. You can find them at sdwhocon.com. Their tickets are on sale. They're looking for panelists. They're looking for special guests. They're looking for attendees, and they're looking for the hotel rooms are on sale. So definitely check that out. And then after that, I'm really working hard on bringing back my festival that I started last year. Had to take a year hiatus off, but Festival of Fools 2, hopefully to come back next April 1st. And then CondorCon, of course, Steamathon, and Clockwork Alchemy this weekend. So if you want to see a live paranormal drama and you love steampunk and you're in the San Jose area or you're already going to Clockwork Alchemy Friday and Saturday night, Sage and Savant, the episode's called Titanic Disaster. And essentially we travel through time during the sinking of the Titanic and embody some of the people that died on the Titanic.
Oh, wow. That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
We're out of time. Thank you so much, Justin. Sorry.
No worries.
Anyway, thank you so much, Justin. I really enjoyed it. Next time we have to do a longer show. Have a
Absolutely.
Great day. And thank you. Thank you for coming on.
I had a wonderful time. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.